You're listening to the Creepcast on downrightcreepy.com. Here's your creepy hosts.
Welcome to the Creepcast. Casey Canton here with JD for another episode on downrightcreepy.com, and on today's show we're going to dial up the creepy and discuss The Black Phone, along with a couple other what to watch recommendations here at the end of this mini creep episode.
Absolutely, man. I'm excited about that. Just watched The Black Phone recently with my wife, and we watched it at home on demand, and I tell you, nice. Man, there's a lot to talk about here. But let me ask you a question real quick. So I was driving down here.
Yeah.
I was on the highway, and I was eating some peanuts.
Okay.
Some salted peanuts. I'm on a diet. And have you ever dropped food in your car and then thought, yeah, I'll get it later. And then you never get it?
Yeah, fries or something all the time. It's gone, like, forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you try and get it and it's a massive accident on the highway.
Because I don't want to cause a huge accident. Yeah, so I'm just like, I'll get it later. And then some people never get them. So it's like it's in the car forever.
The next Final Destination movie is Final Destination Fast Food. And it's someone reaching down for food every scene on the highway. It's a continuous shot on the highway of just people reaching down and causing mass accidents.
You know, I never understood why Tony Todd?
Yep, Tony Todd, Candyman.
Why he wants to kill people
in real life.
In the Final Destination. Well, he wanted to kill me at one point. Wanted to kill you. Which one was it?
Yeah, it was me. Yeah. You asked him a question that I posed at the time.
I never understood why he wanted to kill people in those movies, because don't we just do that to ourselves, really? By eating Wendy's three times a day?
And every time it's like, there's another Texas Roadhouse. I can't wait to eat there. And it's what do you mean? It's like a steak the size of your head. But anyway.
I dropped a peanut and I left. No, I didn't leave. I did leave it, and I have to get it later.
Peanut allergic reaction. Someone in your car is going to die from that, probably. Yeah.
Anyway, on this episode, we are talking about The Black Phone. Let's take a listen real quick to the trailer before we jump into things.
I'll be home in the morning.
Where are you going?
I'm staying over at Susie's tonight.
What's new? The flyer.
The papers call him the Grabber.
I wish you wouldn't call him that.
You don't actually believe that story, do you? Because he can't hear you, and he doesn't really take kids that safe.
Oh! You goof. Well, isn't that just peachy keen?
You need some help?
You see that? Yeah. Would you hand me my hat? Yes, sir. I am a part-time magician.
Are those black balloons in there?
Would you like to see a magic trick?
I have an announcement to make. One of our students, Finny Blake, was abducted.
What if I could help the police find Finny?
Doesn't work. Not since I was a kid.
I'll scream. I'll scratch your face.
This face?
Daddy, I had a dream about it.
What happened in your dream?
He was taken.
By a man with black balloons?
Yes.
We never released those details.
Loose from down there. There's a combination lock on the inside of the storm door.
What's the combination?
I carved it in the wall.
Hang up the phone!
The tree, the door, the gate. I'd never seen it before except in my dream.
You don't have much time.
You're gonna use a weapon. You raise the phone, step back, and swing.
Look what you made me do.
Please hurry!
You remember what I told you?
There's someday I should stand up for myself.
Someday is today, Finn.
went and saw this at our local theater. It was the second weekend, maybe third weekend it was out. And I thought, oh, this is fantastic. I'm going at a time where there's not going to be anyone here. I was right. It was an empty theater. Had it all to myself until 10 minutes into the movie when two people walked in and declared, is this still the previews?
Oh my
God. And walked in front of me. Oh. And I was like, no, it's 10 minutes into the movie and I'm watching it right now. Like, go sit down. And proceeded to talk through a large portion of the movie.
Yeah.
To each other.
Well,
at a volume that probably would have been fine, like maybe a big theater or had there been more people in there. But I was like, come on, guys, there's three of us and two of you are talking.
Well, it doesn't surprise me because, anyway, you know, that's why I've avoided theaters. People say, I avoided theaters because of the pandemic. Well, sort of, but I also avoid theaters because of people.
Well, sure.
Because it never fails. There's some annoyance going on behind me or in front of me that ruins the movie. The only movies that I go to see in theater now is literally the Halloween movies, and that's it.
I always go see, well, two reasons. I always try and go see any major like horror film or even like independent film that gets released at Screenland here because it's the local independent theater. So I always go, and if I go, I always try and go there and like support the theater. That being said, after I had my son, I just find it harder and harder to slip out and go see a movie because I can't take him with me to those movies. And my wife doesn't particularly like those movies. Mm-hmm. So then it's just me on a night when it's her turn to put him to bed and I can slip out and go see a movie at like 9 o'clock.
Right.
Then I have to decide, am I going to fall asleep in theater?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. We're getting to that age where that's a distinct possibility.
So I still love going to the theater and experiencing things, especially like festivals or Comic-Con or South By or whatever, Fantastic Fest. More so when you've got a community of like-minded people because they respect things.
Right.
So anyway, I still love doing that. So I did get to go see it in the theater. Let's go ahead and jump into the synopsis of this before we get into pros and cons. Let's set it up a little bit. So it's from director Scott Derrickson, writer C. Robert Cargill. They're the team that brought us Sinister, but they reunited for this one. And you can really tell kind of thematically some of the visuals and like tone from Sinister get pulled out into this.
It definitely bleeds into it for sure.
Which was cool because I like Sinister.
Yeah, me too. Great
quite
movie.
A bit. I'd like to actually go back and revisit it. I haven't done it in a long time. And we'll get to that in a minute, kind of like maybe some of the threads that get pulled from that movie. But the Black Phone basically is surrounding Finney Shaw. He's a 13-year-old boy, gets abducted by a killer, gets trapped in a soundproof basement. And then we kind of go from there. And the mystery around this disconnected phone that lies in the room on the wall that begins to ring throughout the movie. Abracadabra Magic Company, the Grabber,
right,
as he's known by, is in the Abracadabra Magic van that goes around kind of enticing kids, whether it's with candy or magic tricks, to get into this van, and then he abducts them. So that's the setup around this. So we start to have a lot of kids in this neighborhood start disappearing, including, at some point, Finney Shaw. Now, that's kind of the setup around it. It's a pretty simple premise for the most part. A kid abduction thing, which is interesting because that's kind of what it was. It's kind of what happens in Stranger Things. It's always this thread of throwback formula, like nostalgic vintage, some other era, 80s or 90s or whatever. Kids go missing.
Right, right.
Villain. It's kind of the same setup, but always in a different wrapper.
Yeah,
and
I think
always works and always kind of intrigues me.
Well, it's just a universal fear, I think, when kids go missing. So I mean, it's always going to pull at the heartstrings no matter what.
I think it hits me harder after I was a father. Mm-hmm. I saw A Quiet Place at South By. The opening scene of A Quiet Place, there's the family walking in the forest. It's quiet. The little kid's got a toy car and makes a noise, and he's further up from the family and gets snatched by the beast into the forest. And it, like, hit me harder.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing in It, when we see the little boy's arm get torn off by Pennywise and dragged in. It's pretty shocking in the front part of it, even though you kind of know it's coming. Still, like, I was a new dad at those moments, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And they hit harder, I think, than if I was just
single guy watching it.
Yeah. That's a good point. It's interesting how you can rewatch a movie at a certain stage of your life, and it just completely hits you different.
For sure.
I definitely feel that way with Debbie Does Dallas.
In what way?
What I thought was interesting about this movie is...
there we go. That's the right answer.
No, in all honesty, that it was set in Denver. That was kind of cool because that's something you don't normally hear about movies.
Yeah, you don't get that very often. Of course, a big underground cult of killing magicians there too, historically.
Really?
No, kidding. Oh. I have no idea.
I was gonna say, my gosh. But yeah, you just don't hear Denver a lot.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, just lower class Denver families. Pretty interesting.
Well, speaking of that, something you don't hear about a lot is Ethan Hawke taking on the role of a villain and a real bad guy.
And I do have a clip from the featurette, so let's just take a listen to Ethan Hawke talking about the Grabber here for a second.
Hey, everybody, gather around. I'm going to tell you about the Grabber.
I am a part-time magician.
Are those black balloons in there?
Would you like to see a magic trick?
He's not a good person. Some part of his soul has been so eroded that he can justify things that most of us don't even want to think about. It's very rare to see me playing bad guys, because if you do it right, people believe you are a spawn of Satan. The good news is it might be the time for me to go to the dark side.
Who is this?
You know all our names.
You're getting out of here.
So there you have it, a little bit of insight from Ethan Hawke as to why he doesn't typically take on roles like this. And not regular guy or like Training Day Ethan Hawke.
Right.
But yeah, he takes on a real villain, like monster in this. And the mask that they wear in this, which was designed by Tom Savini, is pretty sinister. No pun intended. But pretty cool design on the mask that he wears. That hides his face and identity outside of the makeup that apparently is enough to hide his identity when he's a magician and a top hat.
It's cool that the masks change.
Yeah, that it's got basically three different ways. You know, it can be a front piece that's just worn more like a face mask. It can be the top half, which has the horns, or it can be assembled together as the full mask. But when we first see him, we see him in kind of clown, like basic clown, almost makeup, pale top hat, big sunglasses. So it makes sense that you wouldn't be able to identify him necessarily when he is cleaned up as just Ethan Hawke that we know him as. He also mentioned that this is a sibling movie to Sinister that goes into a darker, stranger place, and that he always likes to picture a group of friends going to a movie theater at midnight because you like getting scared out of your mind, and that's what the film's about. So talking about that community experience of going with like-minded people, maybe at a festival type of event. This is the perfect setting that Ethan Hawke wants you to see the movie in. So maybe get people over for a movie night if you haven't watched this.
Yeah,
and check it out.
And he's what's interesting to me is that he's the father of Robin from Stranger Things, Maya Hawke, right?
From our last episode.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, a lot of things going on in the Hawke family right now.
Yeah, pretty cool what's going on with them. Of course, this is based on a short story by Joe Hill, who's the son of Stephen King. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of parody and parallels between his dad's work and what I feel like we see in this movie, which I feel like is no coincidence. So it's interesting that you've got kind of a parallel path of Scott Derrickson and C. Robert Cargill that wrote and directed Sinister. And now you've got this, which is kind of the sibling movie to Sinister. And you've got Joe Hill, kind of in some ways, almost a sibling companion story to some of Stephen King's work pulled out into this. So there's some interesting parallels there between those two.
And there was some
groups of people.
Some callbacks to some Stephen King works as well.
Absolutely.
That I'm sure we'll talk about later on here in the episode.
Yeah. So why don't we maybe get into some of those things right now?
Well, the big one that I noticed is that when the sister was looking for the house that she was seeing in her dream.
I guess we should set that tone a little bit.
Sure.
Because we did find, you know, we set it up as it's an abduction
story. All these kids from the same school start going missing in this town. And eventually Finney, the 13-year-old, gets kidnapped. He does have a sister. I'm blanking on her name at the moment. Do you recall?
I do not.
Has a younger sister. Or no, slightly older?
I think, it was hard to tell. I think she's younger.
Okay, yeah, it was kind of hard to tell. Because she's very outspoken, very confident. Whereas right. Finney's very kind of like soft-spoken, not as confident. Still has a group of friends that he hangs out with that clearly is his foundation and
still
base.
Still kind of gets picked on a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we eventually have a classmate that comes out, and since he's been helping him, tutor him with math and stuff, they've formed kind of this special bond almost, like a Dustin and Eddie, mm-hmm. but not as cool, right. Relationship where he gets picked on, and this other kid's known to be kind of a stronger character, not a bully, but definitely someone that no one wants to mess with.
Right.
And they form this friendship, so he kind of has his back throughout. And then his sister's a little bit the same way. Like, she has his back, kind of the typical ribbing between siblings that goes back and forth, but it's definitely a strong love and bond that they share, which is great because they also have a very abusive father.
Yes.
And they've lost their mother because apparently she had some sort of medium, perhaps, type skill where she could see things and dreams and maybe a little The Shining. Coming out.
That's a good point. Never thought about it like that, but yes, absolutely.
So they share
this
bond.
That
kind
of sends her over the edge, and did she commit suicide? Is that what was implied?
That's what's implied by the dad, and the dad thought it was all bullshit, and that she was just seeing things and making it up. She went crazy, essentially.
Right.
And so at one point, the daughter goes and tells the dad and her brother, like, I think I'm seeing things in dreams, maybe with these kids, and the dad thinks it's bullshit and he's an alcoholic and abusive and takes a belt to her and just wails on her. And that is such an uncomfortable scene when I was watching that.
Yes, it is.
Like, heartbreaking scene because you know Finney wants to do something, doesn't feel like he can step in or he'll get it.
Yep.
And it's just a tough situation to watch because you know that happens like every day everywhere.
Well, and I loved that relationship between the brother and the sister because normally you don't get that in movies. A lot of times it's very simple for the
Not
brother and sister to have like a sibling rivalry or they pick on each other. These kids were truly best friends.
Yeah.
And
after it happened, he
consoles came together
because
of their because of their situation. So
she runs to him, they go watch cartoons and, kind of cry in their arms. Yeah, that's a tough scene. Like there's some tough scenes in the movie and that might have been by far the worst.
I think
my opinion.
Yeah.
Tugs at your heartstrings. So that's kind of the setup behind this with some of the characters. I think now maybe we dive into the details of it now that I think we've properly set it up.
Okay.
I mentioned before that the sinister connection with C. Robert Cargill. And you mentioned the dream sequence. I think you were going there for a second before I cut you off. The interesting thing that I saw, as I said, it was a sibling. Sinister, when we watch the videos and you start seeing like the kids in the tree, it had a treatment to it that I felt like we now see in the dream sequences when the sister starts to see visions in her sleep. The same treatment of when they're going through the neighborhood and the houses felt like the video that we were watching in Sinister.
I didn't think about that before, but that's absolutely correct. Same kind of footage.
Mm-hmm, the way they treated that. It almost feels like it's the same universe. Like that takes place later, almost.
Right. Well, I was gonna point out the one thing that I noticed as I was watching it, because I knew that Joe Hill had written this. It's a short story, and I knew that Joe Hill is the son of Stephen King.
Sure.
So those connections made me notice that when she is actually looking for the house, she's wearing the yellow raincoat.
Yep.
From
on a bike.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's raining, going past the sewers.
Right.
I immediately thought of the hints and Easter eggs from Pennywise and Stephen King and the relationship there with his son. And also the callback to Pennywise, not only with the raincoat, but the magician, kind of like a clown-like character with the makeup. The black balloons as an indicator of danger and that he might be present and to make sure that's like a signature thing that you look for if you're a kid out at night, calling back to the red balloons of Pennywise and the danger there. So a lot of parody and overlap
Well, it's just amazing was great. Because Stephen King does that in his books. All of his books connect, and they're all connected by The Dark Tower, this long series that he wrote.
Yeah.
So the fact that the movies are now kind of doing this and kind of leaking into Joe Hill's stories and movies is pretty interesting.
I think in some ways it almost feels like a passing of the torch.
Yeah.
Because they're both, you know, he's very seasoned at this point in his writing career and starting to get adaptations. And Stephen King has just blown up over the last few years even more so. It was like the years of Stephen King for a while. It felt like everything was getting adapted. And so, yeah, in some ways, this movie felt like a passing of the torch from Joe to from Stephen to Joe. And the fact that it bleeds in so much in the parody and parallel was really interesting to me.
The question is, did the torch go out?
No.
Well, let's take it. Let's listen. Or let's
to what?
Let's talk.
Okay, let's keep going. I'll say, I did have some cons with this, but I want to get through some of the pros. I always want to lead with the positive, I think. I've got one for you, and then I'll volley it back over to you.
All right.
I really love the way that the phone calls were treated in this. We mentioned before in the setup that Finney gets kidnapped, and he gets brought to a basement with a dirty mattress and a phone on the wall, but it's disconnected. So you're like, well, that's not going to do anything. But it has to. It's called the black phone. And there's seemingly no way out. You know, giant barricaded door. The thing that I loved is when they start getting these calls that piece together and kind of weave together the storyline of the missing children that have come to fruition in the beginning. We get some backward storytelling, and they start to come to life in reverse. So missing posters, all we really know, light setup on maybe one or two of the characters that have been killed. Then we get a little deeper dive into how they got kidnapped or how they got killed. And the conduit to it all is the black phone on the wall. And the thing that I love is how the dead children, you hear them on the phone, which, you know, no big deal, kind of creepy. But as the camera turns, you start to see the dead children in their makeup,
in the room,
whispering in the ear of Finney.
Kind of gave you a Pet Sematary vibe.
Pet Sematary, Sixth Sense, cowboy Indian, arrow through the head, all those vibes of having it. But I thought it was really clever storytelling because it adds so much to the scenes, seeing the kids, especially the kids that we haven't seen prior to that moment, and giving the backstory of them, bringing them in the middle of something that was already set up, but adds a lot of chill factor to those scenes by having them there and context. So I love that a lot.
Yeah, I thought that was great. And it was creepy.
And I don't know if it was
the makeup and it was really well done.
I don't know if that was portrayed or written in Joe Hill's book or like story.
I'm not sure
that it was that in that sense. Or if they took that material and were like, what if we did this? And how cool would it be if we did this? So I don't know who to tip the hat to. Is it Robert Cargill or is it Scott Derrickson? Is it Joe Hill? I don't know, but it was brilliant, I thought.
Well, I had a question for you about the black phone.
Yeah. I have one right over here. Exactly like it's in the movie.
During the first part, when Finney is in the basement, the first kid that calls him says when he's referring to the killer, he knows that the black phone exists. He doesn't want you to use it. So is that like a metaphor for he doesn't want you to get your confidence? Or was it literally he knows that black phone exists and that dead kids are calling on it and he doesn't want you to use it? You know what I mean?
I think...
because a lot of this is metaphorical. It really is.
You're right. I think, personally, the phone would always work if someone could tap into it.
Okay.
Like, from a psychological standpoint. It's a little bit, like I mentioned earlier, like the Shining aspect of it. I think that Ethan Hawke's character, the Grabber, could get calls on it. I think at some point he ripped the phone off the wall. And so that's the cause of it being disconnected. I think the other kids that were kidnapped before couldn't hear the phone. And I think they were the ones, you know, that were writing things on the wall because they knew other kids were getting kidnapped. And it was almost like they're leaving the breadcrumbs. Like, this is the first time someone's used that instinct or metaphorical sense about it where they could hear the kids and gather the clues throughout the phone calls. I don't think anyone to that point had heard them, other than maybe the grabber. That's what I think.
I think you're maybe right.
Is that how you interpret it?
Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of it was just about that kid finding his confidence.
Oh, absolutely.
And I feel like the black phone was a metaphor for him, like I said, finding his confidence. And by that kid saying he doesn't want you to use the phone is basically saying he doesn't want you to stand up for yourself. Remember, because in the bathroom, his friend says, you know, someday you're going to have to stand up for yourself.
Yep. Yeah,
and he finally does.
The friend he's doing math tutoring for that I mentioned earlier. Yep. Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. I hadn't really thought of it in that sense per se. I mean, it's pretty heavy-handed at some point toward the end that it is about confidence.
Sure.
As he tries to make his way out. But yeah. Do you have? I'm gonna keep the volley back over to you. What do you have up next?
Well,
any
I
other
think,
pros?
I think yeah. This was really a movie. Ethan Hawke was very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting in this movie. He had a bit of mystery to him to where you don't really quite understand his motives.
Yeah.
You don't really quite understand why he's doing what he's doing.
Even when it's done.
And he keeps you guessing. He says, you know, I wanted to let you go, but I couldn't. And then he says, it's all not going to plan. And then he says, I didn't kidnap those other kids. And it's just like, he just kind of keeps you on your toes a little bit. And then when you find out what game he's trying to play, even then you just really don't know his motive. And in some cases, of course, you don't really need to know the motive of the bad guy.
Yeah, it makes it even creepier.
It's just, you know, some people are just bad. And so that was awesome. I will say that I loved the part of the film that I loved the most was the reveal. And I don't know that everyone's going to get this. The reveal that everything the kids were telling him was not a way to escape. Mm. It was all pieces of a puzzle so that he could finally escape. Like you said, leaving the breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
Dig the hole later on so he'll fall in it.
Yeah.
Get into the freezer later on so he could take the meat to distract the dog. It's almost like an escape room.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thought that part was really cool.
Yeah.
Where they finally reveal that everything kind of plays a part.
So I'm glad you brought that up because that's my next part of the pros, is that it plays out. The whole movie felt like it could be an AGR, which is an alternative reality game, where it is leaving you kind of clues to solve a puzzle that's a part of a bigger picture, a bigger story. And you could almost play it like that. Mm-hmm. You could almost take that thing, devoid of a movie, and put it in an escape room setting, and it could just be a game. So I thought that was intriguing in a sense. It's more of a murder mystery at its core, or a kidnap type of event. And you had codes carved in the wall, and the missing posters, the abracadabra magic company that we talked about, and the mask, the mystery phone that rings in the room at random with children's dead voices giving you the clues. All those things could have been woven into like Twitter and almost even dropped on Twitter as clues that you could solve on a digital puzzle online and like hide all those things places. The one thing that's kind of cool, I didn't think it was done very well though, was they had an SMS text system set up for the movie. So on Twitter, I think is where I found it, or maybe a clip at the end of the trailer, you could text a number and essentially opt into this game and call a phone number. And then you would get a text back with a phone number that you could click on and say call, whatever. It would have a little message from the grabber. You would get texts with like animated GIFs. Like it was trying to show some intrigue about the storyline and maybe clues like this, but nothing in the detail that I think they could have been. And I get you don't want to spoil the movie because it's really a marketing campaign leading up to it. But they were trying to hint at what you said and like gamified a little bit as a marketing campaign.
Yeah.
The whole thing could be that.
Yeah, well, yeah. Everything,
if you didn't
everything
know it was
led
a movie.
to another. And you don't realize that until the end that everything is going to play a part. But
I feel like you know it's trending that. Like,
right, right.
You know, there's a purpose behind all of it, even if you don't get it at first.
But to the average viewer, it might just seem like, okay, these are all escape attempts, and they're just not working.
Yeah,
but
in
really,
my mind,
it wasn't. It just led to all one big escape.
Yeah, in my mind, I was expecting that, like at some point. But yeah, you're right.
What about the cons? Or do you have more pros?
No, I have some cons. I will say, though, since we're on the topic of, like, it could be an escape room. It is going to be part of Halloween Horror Nights, Universal Studios. Part of the theme this year, one of the themes is the horrors of Blumhouse. And it will include the Black Phone as one and Freaky as the other. I don't know if you saw Freaky a while back. But
I have not seen Freaky.
That's pretty fun. But yeah,
pretty
the Black
what?
Pretty fun, I said.
Oh, okay.
It's called Freaky. I said it's pretty fun.
Gotcha.
Pretty fun movie.
Something else.
No. I don't know what you thought I said, but I'm scared to ask. So yeah, the Black Phone's going to be part of that. There's a trailer up for it, actually, if you search the horrors of Blumhouse Halloween Horror Nights. So go check that out. It's up on YouTube. Let's get into the cons real quick. I'll kick things off. I didn't particularly like the acting from the young actress. I felt it was always a little forced. Not in every scene, but in some scenes it just didn't feel very believable. Again, I know we're suspending our disbelief in this, but a lot of this felt fairly rooted in reality until you maybe get to the Home Alone-esque part of it at the end. But and I never like to criticize. I try and always find like positive criticisms, like critique it in a way that's you're not going to like bash people. So I don't want people to think I'm just bashing a young actress. I just felt like there were certain parts that weren't as strong as others.
Well, let's be honest. When you put yourself out there, you put yourself out there for criticism.
Sure.
I mean, yeah. we're recording these podcasts.
Oh yeah, I mean, and look, we're not very good at this.
People could, you know, people are going to criticize as they wish, and you just got to kind of take it and maybe improve by it. So I don't really have a problem with, you know, putting down 8-year-olds. Now I will say this: I completely agree.
Okay.
The acting of the and I think we said in a previous podcast episode with child actors.
Yeah.
The acting can either make or break a movie.
Absolutely.
And I think that she was pretty weak. Now, again, does that have to do with the material? I think some of it does. When you ask a young actress to cuss out police officers.
Yeah, that was a jarring scene, I thought.
That just doesn't... And I mean, I made a note here. She called him a fart knocker.
Well, she used some other colorful F language, I believe.
And then she, at one point, gets down on her knees and asks Jesus what the F?
Yep. I laughed at both of those scenes to myself.
Those scenes, honestly...
Did they take you out of it?
Took me out of the movie a little bit. Because it's like, whoa. You know, like you said, a lot of it's rooted in reality. And I know, you know, ghosts are talking on a phone. That's not very reality-based. But, but a lot of it is pretty gritty and, you know, based in reality. And then you have these two scenes where it's like... Like you said, just kind of jarring. Like, what's going on here? So
yeah, I don't know if it was for levity in a heavy storyline and it provided something.
That's a tough thing to balance because when you attempt that levity, you can oftentimes do what this did and kind of ruin the whole thing. And I think to a certain extent, it kind of ruined some things for me.
And of course, this is me not knowing source material 80% of the time. But another pro or another con for me was the uncle that was staying with the grabber. He was the uncle, right? Or was he the brother?
He was the brother of the grabber.
Okay, brother. I couldn't remember brother or uncle. But the brother of the grabber that was staying with him was like this true crime detective when the cops showed up. And we don't know it at the time that it's his brother. But when we see the reveal that he's staying with the grabber in his supposed house, and he's got this... map out like Charlie from Always Sunny, like trying to figure out what's going on here with all these strings and yarn and like this neighborhood has a garage or whatever he was talking about. The complete and utter idiocracy of this man that he's going to this extent to figure out what's happening with this crime and the kid's in the fucking basement
right
the whole time. How do you not, like, soundproof aside, you've got the grabber going down to feed someone and he's talking and how is this guy this much of a sleuth?
Yeah.
And then he's like, what? And he's like, I thought something was up when he goes down with the,
oh my God.
And then it's like, just like,
he's so
swapped right in the head.
He's so surprised.
Yeah.
By the fact that this kid's in his basement when, like you said, you know, here's Sherlock Holmes and it's been right under his nose the entire time. that character was not developed well at all.
No.
And well, and character development, in my opinion, was a problem with this movie.
It comes down to, like, this movie, I'd have to check the runtime again. I believe it was like 93 minutes, roughly.
Yeah, it's short.
Well, that's the thing, though, is I like a 90-minute movie. I don't need two-and-a-half-hour Marvel movies. I'll say,
I agree,
this would have benefited from another, like, 5 minutes of character development, even with this guy when the cops aren't there. Like, give me some, or before they got there.
Yeah.
Like, some sort of, like, maybe after they got their interaction in passing. Like, even hinting that he might be staying at the Grabber's house. I don't know, something.
Well, just keep in mind that this is the only death that we see on screen, right? Him killing his brother.
I think you're right, because otherwise it's kidnapping.
The only death we see on screen.
That's even hinted at.
And it's not...
It's a good point.
There's no stakes involved for me. It's just like, oh, here's this guy who is an idiot, and I don't really care, and then he gets an axe in the head or whatever.
There's a little, you know...
It doesn't
matter.
There's
a little bit, it's mild in my opinion, of like, oh, aha.
Yeah.
Like, he's been in the house the whole time. And the bigger part was that he had two houses.
Right.
Across from one another.
Right.
So the whole time, it's the switcheroo of, like, you think something's happening here, which I guess it is, and then he's burying the bodies across the street in the basement.
Yeah. Yeah, the murder of the brother could have been a lot more shocking, I think, if they had developed that character more.
It's the Buffalo Bill...
Right.
We bust in the wrong house type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of cool.
I did like
that
moment.
Nice little twist.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, just more character development, I think, would have helped this movie a lot.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's kind of hard to do in the tight 90 minutes, which I would prefer more movies to be that way.
Don't develop the Grabber. Keep him a mystery. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But, and there was some character development with the kids. I understand their dad's abusive and.
And, yeah, I mean, you got the most backstory there, which I think was important. I think it was important about Finney and struggling with confidence, because that's really the core of the movie. Like you said, the message of it is to have confidence in yourself, essentially.
This was definitely a get-in, get-out movie.
Yeah.
I'm
fine with those kind of movies.
And I'm fine with those movies, too, but I think it was a little quick to get out.
Yeah. One thing I want to call out as we wrap this up and get into ratings, unless you have more cons.
I know, that's good.
I noticed something the other day. I was watching something on John Wayne Gacy, and it was, I think...
Is this on Netflix?
I think it was the John Wayne Gacy tapes on Netflix.
We're currently watching that.
Some footage of a house. Come over here real quick. I know this is enthralling for podcasts, but there's footage of a house that kind of started to remind me a little bit of the Grabber's house, the brick house, and the fact that John Wayne Gacy is murdering kids and burying them kind of reminded me of the Grabber a little bit. And I don't know if there's any influence at all, but it was like, man, what a weird kind
That's
of coincidence.
That's a good point. The houses are similar.
And then he's dressed like a clown, and it's a little... I mean, I know that he's a magician. There's a difference there, but it's interesting crossover, I thought. So,
isn't Gacy just the most despicable person?
Yeah.
The more I learn about that Gacy, the more I don't care about him.
Yeah, well...
He's he's just... He blames literally everybody else for everything.
Yeah.
Hey, you murdered 40 people, and then he finds a way to blame the victims.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
There's more. We can get into that a little bit more when we get into our L.A. horror museum trip, and I can get into my Zach Bagans haunted museum trip, because there's some Gacy stuff in there.
Cool.
Would you give this as a rating out of 100%? What's your rating on this one?
I'm going to give it a 77%.
That's still solid for some of the criticism you had. I thought you might even come in lower than that.
No,
so.
It was a solid movie. Like I said, I think it was... It was pretty concise, and I appreciate that. I think it, like you said, would have benefited for 10, 15 more minutes of
development,
some character development. But otherwise, you know, good little film.
Yeah.
Nothing real special. I probably will never watch it again, but...
Yeah, I might. Yeah, I mean, I saw it in theaters, so I think it's one of those, if I see it on, like, HBO Max or whatever platform it in, I would watch it again. I also feel like it benefits from watching it with some friends. It's kind of a fun, even though the topic of it's not a movie to watch around Halloween. I give it an 85%. I think even for its flaws, there was a lot I liked about it, and I like seeing Ethan Hawke in this character and would like to see him in more roles similar to this.
Have you seen the movie, speaking of Ethan Hawke, real quick, have you seen the movie where he's a pastor and he's losing his faith? And then he's just, it turns out he's insane.
No. What's the name of it? You know?
I can't remember.
Think about that. Oh, bring man. It up on our next show.
Yes, you definitely show if, you can remember. If you're a fan of Ethan Hawke,
you can probably go
definitely on catch that movie. It's, oh my gosh, it's amazing.
Hey everybody, did you know that Downright Creepy is now part of the Fangoria family? What I mean by that is you can go to shop.fangoria.com/downrightcreepy and get 20% off your entire order. That also includes subscriptions and one-time orders. Enter the affiliate code downrightcreepy, all one word, all caps, and get 20% off at shop.fangoria.com/downrightcreepy. Let's wrap this up real quick with a what to watch, just a couple sentences about anything you've seen lately that you might want to recommend as a watch.
Okay. So I've been trying to go back and watch, I say classic movies, 1978, The Deer Hunter. This is essential if you like Robert De Niro. He was in The Godfather, Taxi Driver, and then The Deer Hunter. Amazing.
That was a sequence?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And
I didn't realize that. I just didn't think about the timeline.
There, but Godfather, Taxi Driver.
Big releases.
Yeah. Godfather 74, or Godfather 2. Taxi Driver 76, and then Deer Hunter 78.
Hmm.
And it's about three guys that go to Vietnam. And it's really three acts. It's a three-hour-long movie.
Yeah.
First act is just about their life and them going hunting together. And it's kind of slow, and you're kind of like, get on with it a little bit. So the first hour may drag a little bit. Second hour is about Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't show any battles.
Mm-hmm.
They just show them captured in what they go through. And it's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
And then the third act is about them coming back, and well, one of them doesn't come back, but them coming back and how they deal with it. De Niro's character is kind of withdrawn a little bit, but still tries to hold that strong central point for the rest of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have John Savage, who plays another character who loses his legs in Vietnam and how he deals with that. And then the star, in my opinion, is Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken is amazing in this film, and this film really brought him to the public's attention as Nicky, and he's just great. And his character arc is just amazing, absolutely amazing. I highly suggest watching The Deer Hunter, especially if you're a fan of De Niro or Walken. It's amazing. The last two-thirds of the film is pretty shocking.
What platform did you watch this on?
Was it on demand?
Okay.
Yeah.
Mine's kind of also on demand. Excuse me. My goodness, we've been talking a lot today. But it's a YouTube channel that I think is actually really interesting. It's called the Grim Life Collective. They've been around for a while. It's actually a two-person team, and they kind of travel around the country looking for haunted places, haunted houses. Just interesting things that horror fans would relate to and enjoy. And they give you a tour of these things. So like a lights on tour of a haunted house in the off season. So you get to kind of see the behind the scenes of it and like really take in the detail of it that you might not be able to do when you're walking through it, you know, being pushed through a haunted house. Everything's shot beautifully. It's in like 4K. It looks like, there's some interesting commentary behind it. You also get to learn a little bit more about like the haunted houses from the people that own and run them. And maybe their psychology behind it, all the way to something where they go visit a cemetery that has the Oracle Ouija board ghost, the spirit ghost. I can't think of the name of it right now. It's a green ghost shrouded in green at a mausoleum.
Slimer?
No, that's not it. Mm. But it's supposedly a curse. When you look into its eyes, you get cursed or perhaps die. But it's mimicked off of what they think is on the box of a Ouija board. But it's in the Chicago cemetery, and there's all these other beautiful like graves and stories that are told as they walk through and tour it. So it's a kind of wide variety of things, all the way to like Halloween Horror Nights, and they'll give you a tour of that and a walkthrough and commentary. The latest thing I watched was they went to like Kobe's crash site and kind of talked about the things leading up to that moment. And so it's pretty interesting. And they go to a lot of cool places. Like occasionally I'll just dip into something, put it on the background while I'm working and kind of observe. But if you like Halloween, you want to get into the mood and you can't go and visit these places, they give you a really good inside look. So it's called the Grim Life Collective. That's two M's on Grim. I highly recommend checking out their YouTube channel. I think it's cool. And that's all we got for this little mini creep. We still went about 40 minutes, a little longer.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm glad we got to do this.
I'm glad we got to watch that movie, and I'm looking forward to more episodes in the future.
And you can tweet us. Yes. You can ask the creeps, hashtag ask the creeps at downright creepy, hashtag creepcast on Twitter. If you have any questions for us or topics you want us to discuss on the show, let us know there. Best one we'll read or do an episode on if it's intriguing enough, and we'll send you a t-shirt. So check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, at Downright Creepy.
And no questions are off limits.
No questions are off limits. You heard it here first. So yeah, get a hold of us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Creepcast.